This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com, Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and it is that time that we get into it with the fellas of the MGo Blog Roundtable, joining us as they do every week, every Thursday in the 9 o'clock hour, the crew from MGo Blog, starting with Mr. MGo Blog himself, Brian Cook, BC, how are you?
I'm all right.
And then Mr. MGo Blog number two, Seth Fisher, how are you?
I'm all right. I am playing very, very soft coverage today.
And then the venerable Craig Ross is with us again in studio. Good to have you back in studio, Craig. How are you?
Thanks, Sam. I'm straight from the nursing home. Straight from the nursing home to the WTKA studios.
All right. So, yeah, this is a rubber meet road week, if ever there was one. And it's coming off a game, though, that was a lot closer than most of us, I assume you guys, thought it would be. They do survive in advance, so to speak, as the defense was really able to save the day for Michigan in the second half against Rutgers as they won 20-13. So let's do the broad brush thing, and then we can dive into specifics after that. But your impressions, A, of Michigan coming off of that game, B, Rutgers, and how you're feeling about Michigan heading into the matchup with Wisconsin, starting with you, Brian Cook.
Well, I mean, Rutgers isn't a doormat. Shannon's a good coach, but the lack of a plan B really kind of stood out as worrying. So I think everybody in the world, they gave that bash run to Corum late, and everybody was like, that's the first perimeter run we've had all day. You know, AJ Henning didn't get a touch. They were really stacking the interior of the box, and some of that's the running back's fault because I think there are opportunities to bounce. But once the run game got shut down, you really kind of, it was a struggle to see Michigan do anything that was going to break them out of that box. And that was disappointing. And then the soft coverage, what is with it? Like, you're playing Noah Vedral. You need, it's first and 10. You can't give him a 5-yard hit that turns into 8 yards. I do not understand that. I just struggle. Like, they got hit on that one third down on the first drive. And I don't know what they were thinking, because all of Vedral's other passes that were deep went literally out of bounds. So it's like, get up on these guys and force them to do something else, and just letting their offense get in a rhythm while Rutgers wasn't letting Michigan do the same was pretty frustrating.
Craig?
My view is going to be probably a little different than just about everybody else's. I had seen Rutgers play earlier in the year, and I had watched most all of the Syracuse game. And I felt Rutgers was a pretty good defensive team, and they had improved markedly on defense over prior years. And so I wasn't particularly disappointed, particularly in the first half, with what Michigan did. In the second half, it was definitely disappointing, and some things went the wrong way, and I understand the frustrations. My disappointment is on defense, because this is a terrible, Rutgers is a terrible offensive team. They could not move the ball against Syracuse. They gained 195 total yards in that game. And in the second half, I mean, they're running what Brian and Seth, I think, call inverted veers, and the heck if we could stop it. And I mean, we seem completely baffled by the play, and the short outs were frustrating because they were playing soft. And so I found it a maddening game in that respect, because while I do think there are synergies, and the fact that the defense didn't get off the field, I think, made it even harder for the offense. Of course, the opposite is also true.
Yeah. So. Seth?
Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. I'm getting some feedback. I thought that Michigan didn't take Rutgers seriously on both sides of the ball. And like, this has been a problem against Rutgers forever. Like, Michigan runs those fake zone reads. They don't adapt. Rutgers is bringing down a safety and adding him to the box. Michigan doesn't adapt. There are some things that I can say, like, okay, fine. Like, Cade was just missing it in the second half, right? Like, I don't know what caused that. I don't know. I can't look at the film and say this is what happened in Cade's head, right? But I can definitely, like, say, like, Michigan just did not have any... We did twice. We ran that bash play twice. And, like, the first time, it just, like, Corum actually tried to cut it up inside. And that was one of the issues this game, that the running backs were not getting everything that was on the table for them. And that's, like, the first time that's happened this year. Other than that, like, Rutgers' defensive line is way better than the other defensive lines we faced. I think now we can officially say Washington was overrated. And, like, as we've already mentioned, the playing off coverage against them just makes no sense unless you're just practicing that for some other time. Green, especially, was just playing so far back.
I don't know what that feedback is. Is that coming from the stream? It's coming from the stream. So we'll try to figure that out. I'll try to fill for a second, Ira, while we try to figure that out. So to me, defensively, yeah, they got hit. We went back and counted. There were 18 plays off of their power scheme, whether it's the power read, that power swing, or hitting that hitch on the backside because they're giving it to you. Right. And while, yeah, it was tough for them to adjust and adapt to that for a couple of reasons, in my opinion. Josh Ross is out. And so you saw them really taking advantage of some youth on the interior. I think that was a factor. And then, man, so you want to adjust to it because there are those times where they went unbalanced and you would see that huge hole over the guard. You just knew Vedra was going to keep on that particular look, and it was tough to get that fixed when you got a young linebacker in there and you're back on the field in three plays. So you got to go to the sideline, you got to get refreshed, and then your coach is trying to, you know, get the fix in there. But no, now you got to get right back on the field. So I just feel like, for as much as it was frustrating, I guess the most frustrating part to me was the coverage part,
yeah,
the soft coverage part. But I get why they were able to get chunks, why they were able to gouge them with that power scheme, because it was a convergence of unfortunate events for them. And they were able to bow up. I've said that during the game. They were able to bow up and get those stops down the stretch. The bigger issue to me was offense in that game. What can you do when a team in the Big Ten, who they have what you do over the first three games, they got that committed to memory. They know all the tweaks that you made in the offseason, what you emphasized, and they have the benefit of history. And you know what? They got some pretty good physical players in the box. So what are you going to do when they say you're not going to run on us in the way that Rutgers just did?
I mean, Michigan just did not have – you saw Rutgers use a lot of the answers that Michigan could have used, right? They were using RPOs and forcing you to keep somebody outside against a screen, right? We ran none of those. We had no orbit motions or anything like that. Any of the things that we've used in the past just to, like, pull one of those guys away, and then we don't run a zone read correctly. And as Brian mentioned, like, no touches, not a single touch on offense for A.J. Henning, who every time he touched the ball on a punt return was killing them. And I just wanted to say quickly, I totally agree with you on the linebacker situation in the second half, especially regarding the power reads. Because when I looked at those plays and broke down what was happening on every one of them, almost every single time it was just Mullings kind of overrunning the play a little bit, not really seeing who had the ball. And it's just so weird. This program with zone read is just like, it for some reason that play just makes us fritz out.
Yeah, I guess for me, you know, we've talked because Jack, we have a lot of voices. So we talked to Devin, we talked to Jack Miller, talked to Al Borges. Jack is of the mind about the outside runs. And they could have called another outside run or two, I suppose. But they had three straight outs. You know, you're coming into the second half up 20-3. I don't take issue with that first series, the, you know, the breakdown that they had. I mean, there was a, there should have been a completion or at least a pass interference in there on that slot A to AJ Henning. If there's a ball in the vicinity, Michigan picks up a first down there, but they don't. And then you come out and they get in a third and short situation. I mean, okay, maybe you can call in on that third and short. You can call an outside run. But the issue that I see is they could not keep the chains moving with pass plays that were there. With pass plays that were, it'd be different if they weren't creating open opportunities in the pass game, but they were. And if that can't be consistent, I don't care what you call in the run game, you're not going to beat some of these. You're not going to beat Wisconsin like that. I don't care what run plays you call.
Yeah, it's. I agree with that. I mean, the first series, Michigan pretty much just ran the ball. And Rutgers came out, I believe this is right, pretty much too high. The safeties were 10 yards off the line of scrimmage. The first four plays, they ran split zone, I think, in pin and pull, and they ended up with about 29 yards on four runs. And that was true through most of that first drive. They didn't really need to run the ball as long as the safeties are standing back in Palookaville. And the but then Rutgers brought a safety down. We're jamming the box, and we didn't really seem to adjust to that particularly well at all. I mean, there was a lot of, well, let's keep trying to do the same stuff. Now, the second drive was fine.
Yeah, however. They're up 20-3 at the half. Mm-hmm. It should have been 24-3 if that touchdown is hit.
Yeah,
in the end
zone. That was also frustrating because I think they had another play to, they could have still run at the goal line. Now, I guess you could say, well, we'll be safe and we'll go in the half 20-3. I think they could have been safe and still run one more play, but that's.
So the question then becomes, I mean, do you have to coach around that? Because I think that's what we are.
Do you have to coach around your starting quarterback?
Mr. Weintraub? So Brian or Seth?
It's kind of hit or miss. We'll
jump in here to see if we got the feedback figured out. Question is, do you have to come up with ways to coach around that? Do you have to take it as a given that some of these plays that were available, that were open, that you just are not going to hit a high percentage of those?
I mean, I don't know how much you can possibly coach around the quarterback situation more than you already are. Mm-hmm. You're throwing fewer passes than any non-service academy in the country, right? There's nowhere else to go. So, I mean, one thing that you could see a focus on some screens and stuff like that. But whenever we have like things that seem like speed and space, it seems like two games later, it's gone. So it really is it's been very schizophrenic in the Gattis era. Cause it feels like, okay, this is what we've seen. As promised, and, you know, attacking both sides of the field at the same time, trying to like get people moving the wrong direction when you're trying to get a run play in. And then you see a couple games later, something like this, where it's like, well, where were our slot receivers? I mean, Sainer still did drop a ball, which is unfortunate. They hit him with a couple of RPOs, but I don't think that you can avoid throwing the ball more than you already have.
Yeah. So again, I asked this question last week and I want to revisit it again because most coaches don't even think about benching your 4-0 quarterback, right? I know that they're a fan. I'm going to hear it. They need to be playing the best. Your quarterback is one of your leaders. He's shown some moxie. He's had two tough games against your tougher opponents, but he's displaying some leadership for you. You don't consider benching him, especially after you can see it's the residual effects from that huge shot he took at the end of the first half. So I think that that's not an excuse. I'm not saying it should be that way. I just think that that's what happened. Now, is it possible that you can continue to build him up? You can continue to take advantage of that leadership and mix in maybe a change up, mix in maybe a little more mobility, maybe mix in a little more mobility that also is a passing threat too into the equation to complement what you have. Can you do that without being disruptive? And does it even matter? Can you, what are you really disrupting at this point would be the question.
I mean, that's just a lot of faith in Dan Villari that I'm not sure I share.
Man, what a one.
But you get what I'm saying, right? I'm not one of those people that's talking about, you need to change quarterback. I just don't realistic conversation, but I do think it's realistic to be saying, hey, man, you know what? What can you do? What can you do to jumpstart things at times? To me, that's the most obvious answer.
We're talking about tactics, and at this point, your tactic, if you were getting to the point where you've only used your quarterback fewer times than the service academies, and one drive of him just throwing completely off, or maybe two drives of him being completely off, and you're like, okay, we got to put the pass game away and just turtle. I mean, that is a major problem program wise. This is the same guy. This is the same exact team minus Michael Dwumfor that McNamara was money on last year, right? He came in, he won that game for us. So what's happening to our starting quarterbacks? Why is it every time we go into a season under Harbaugh, our quarterbacks are regressing?
Yeah, I don't. So two things. I don't think this is the same Rutgers team. Number one, I think they were better. That's number one. They, you know, dare I say, I won't say that they necessarily won both lines of scrimmage, but certainly in the second half, you would say that they beat Michigan's offensive line. I think that's very fair to say.
Absolutely. Right?
Yeah. You know, they really disrupted Michigan with movement. Michigan, there were mistakes made in run blocking in this game that we didn't see. Now, some of that is Michigan. Some of that you got to give credit to Rutgers, too. But I think it's a couple. I asked Devin this very question. His reply was, it's different when you're the guy. Like, you know, Cade McNamara coming in last year in relief against a Rutgers team not as good, versus now you're the guy and you're facing a Rutgers team that's better. That was his explanation to it. And I don't know if that's satisfactory, but
I scouted Rutgers for faux film last year, and you know, I was watching this team pretty intently, and they're the same team. They're not that good in coverage. They are excellent on the line. The only difference really was that they didn't have Julius Turner for a half. So like they were without that nose, and that nose was just beaten Vestardis. I mean, that was just a talent issue. He just doesn't have the physical quickness to keep up with that guy, and credit Rutgers for that. Tarudov is a good player. They've got some player. Fatakasi is great, and I like their system. But the reason why Michigan was struggling so much is because Rutgers was able to play a man up in the box against them. Michigan didn't have an answer, any kind of answer. If you're not throwing like that, you have to have some sort of run game from your quarterback. You have to. Or you have to have some sort of screen game that's going to win you in situations. You have to have something you can hang your hat on. And, I mean, if you can't play action pass against them because you don't trust your quarterback to throw, I mean, yeah, give the backup that's what happened to Milton last year, right? Like, Milton, I'm sure, was not happy that he got pulled, but he had to get pulled. And, I mean, I holistically don't understand why this keeps happening to our starting quarterbacks, but if you're in that situation at that point, you got to just, you can't have no quarterback whatsoever unless you're going to totally be a service academy or totally be a quarterback run team.
All right. Did you guys feel, Brian? I mean, again, I admit to not really factoring it in during the game, that huge shot he took, but he seemed like a different guy mechanically after that. And I'm just curious if you guys make note of that too.
I mean, I don't know. Like that happened before halftime. You have him in for all halftime, and it seems like I it's hard for me to say, right? Like, because we've seen so little of him. I mean, he's thrown so little that maybe that sort of inaccuracy that he had in the second half was just kind of part of who he is, but maybe it was the hit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Devin seemed to think it was possible.
Devin was more like, that's not an excuse. I'm not making an excuse. I'm not saying that you should be like, charge that to the game. I'm just trying to figure out why a guy who... There were some pass plays that he missed in the first half, too. Now, even before the touchdown. But he hit a few, including the one where he stood in there and delivered it to Mike Saint-Wristel. But man, the pass to Henning, that would have been interference if it's anywhere in the vicinity. The three passes on the three pass plays on that one three and out drive, the skip pass to Henning on the out. I mean, you got plays that are there that, you know, one of those you think he would hit.
He certainly missed receivers on plays that were eminently doable and on plays when he had sufficient protection for the pass in question. So I don't know. I mean, I tend to agree with Brian. This just is who he is to some extent, but it's certainly possible.
I think what Brian is saying is we don't have the information. I mean, I understand what Devin Gardner's talking because he's been there. He's taken some hits while being the Michigan quarterback, right? Yeah, so he knows what that feels like. I have no idea what that feels like. So I can't talk like that. I'm sitting here watching like him blink on TV going, is he concussed? Like we can't do that on film. I can tell you what his throws were. His throws before the hit were bad read, catchable, dead on, catchable, catchable, marginal, dead on, catchable, dead on plus. Afterwards, horribly inaccurate, inaccurate, catchable minus, inaccurate, inaccurate. He was pressured and then horribly inaccurate. So the charting shows a very stark difference from one to the other, and we all saw it, but it's such a small number of throws, and we're not seeing it in practice. Does he start throwing like that in practice when he gets hit? Is that why they're limiting it? Like, there are things that we don't know about Cade because we have not seen enough in order to, like, say anything intelligently and say, like, this is the reason, or even say, like, we think this is the reason.
Well, I think the point you just made about the small sample space, I think that's why, look, you can't be hasty. You can't, you know, from a coaching perspective, they can't be impetuous and sit their 4-0 quarterback down based on this sample space. I do think that this Wisconsin game is very significant. Now, my question for you guys to ponder is, do you have to wait for a loss to start playing your changeups? And it seems like that's likely the case. That's likely the case. But think about that, because I don't see a way. I don't care what run menu you come up with against Wisconsin. I do not see a way for them to win this game if Cade McNamara doesn't have his best passing day of the year, which is not a high bar, I know, but you get the point. I'm curious if you guys agree with that. Man, I think this is my personal opinion. I said it after the Western Michigan game. This is not just talking about after they lose. I think that they need to be playing JJ some. I do.
That was very clear.
I guess your observation of what they should be doing, we both have thoughts. My observation is there are ways to inject into this offense some of what you need without putting all the load on a true freshman's shoulders. So it's a way to piecemeal him in and get him acclimated, and while also preserving the leadership of your starter, provided he isn't, you know, fragile mentally, and there's nothing to suggest that he is. So I would think that
were you telling me that he had a terrible Washington game because he got rattled because of the big throw that JJ had?
So
that doesn't seem very like.
But you know, hey man, that's one of those things where he's paid his dues. He's the guy, and you don't want to have everything be about the new guy. I mean, that to me is where the coaching psychology comes in. That's why they get paid the big bucks.
Very good job in coaching psychology with their quarterbacks. Do you want to run through all the quarterbacks that they've had in this program since Harbaugh got here? How psychologically stable are any of them?
I don't know. But the here and
give me
now.
Jake Rudock's mental stability.
Right.
Whatever they're doing, they're doing it wrong. Whatever, if they're thinking to themselves, well, you know, we can't put the guy in until we've got a loss, and then we anoint the new one. I think that's terrible. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, and I'm married to one, and I don't think that that's a very good way to handle people. You got to make it not a big deal, not like make everything like the be all end all, like, hey, you're the leader, you're the guy who's got to make this happen now. More pressure. Maybe that's how Harbaugh functions, but I don't think that's how most people function.
Would it be better if Joe Milton was around this year to compete for the quarterback position? I mean, as a question,
Brandon Peters could still be around.
or Brandon Peterson.
Like they have a lot of guys who've left the program.
And I assume they left the program, you know, for a reason. You know, they were unhappy with one thing or another. And so your point is a good one, Seth, which is, you know, when we got Harbaugh, we assumed the one thing we could sort of breathe a sigh of relief about was, well, we'd have good quarterback play. Well, really, nothing has marked this period more than that complete absence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, really, I mean, quarterback play since he's been here has been really not very good.
And including himself, Harbaugh quarterbacks before Michigan would run the ball. Andrew Luck would run the ball all the time. He was not a great runner, but he got like 500 yards a year. You know, he went and drafted Kaepernick. And he didn't have a problem with that before.
That's something that I just don't think is realistic to expect from Kate. Like you are getting that.
Yeah, he's not going to run.
The time he tried, he had seen, I think it was on the bash play.
Yeah.
Where the safety comes screaming down like he had so many times, but you had the end pinch, the safety came screaming down. I think he thought, oh man, I'm going to be able to keep this. And he made that decision before the snap of the ball.
Which is not how you run a freaking zone read. Right. And they're doing that on defense too. They had Michael Morris run, like choosing quarterback or running back and going and tackling him. Like
I'm certain without even asking. And I asked about the bash play because credit to you for knowing the bash play. I didn't know the bash play. I asked, are you guys leaving that guy unblocked on purpose? Yeah, that's a bash play. So
yeah, you
learn something new. I didn't know about that play. But I'm telling you, they do not coach him to on the zone.
All right, guys, stand by. What he did back on the radio, stand by.
Yeah, in fact, if there's a give there, that I think it's Corum. Corum has a chance for a big play.
Yeah. So, guys, I put a question to you before the break, and I want to make something very clear because a guy tweeted me during the game, why aren't you on Cade's side? I said, wait, I'm not one of those bench Cade McNamara guys. That's not me. I'm actually saying, no, you don't even think about benching Cade McNamara right now. That should not be. Most coaches, most teams don't do that to 4-0 quarterbacks who haven't turned the football over, who's seen as a team leader, who is still only going into his, fifth game as a starter? So the sample space, to Seth's point, is very, very small. All I've been saying is you have a complementary skill set in some regard on your bench. And if there's a way to incorporate some of that without throwing your freshman quarterback to the wolves and without, you know, sort of damaging the psyche of your starter, can you do that? Can you explore that before it costs you a game? Before it costs you a game that you don't have the kind of production from that position that you need?
Well, it seems at least plausible because New Orleans did it in the NFL last year with Drew Brees as a Hall of Fame quarterback. They were still using, I'm blocking on his name, the kid from
Taysom Hill,
BYU.
Taysom Hill.
Yeah, Taysom Hill.
Who Harbaugh recruited, by the way. Twice.
And other teams have done it. Michigan, I think, did it with Devin and Denard.
They
and
did.
It didn't seem to ruin their relationship, but
Denard's ultra nerve was about to give out. So
seems at least vaguely plausible, or at least abstractly plausible. Now, whether it's plausible in relation to the personalities they have, I don't know. You know, that's a question I can't answer.
Yeah, Brian, I know you were pretty adamant about being against that last week. I can't imagine it would be. I don't know if it's easier or harder to do so, you know, after struggle versus after big success. But do you feel any differently about it this week after the Rutgers game?
Well, I mean, I think the most likely thing that's going to happen here is that Michigan's going to play Wisconsin and they're not going to be able to run the ball very well because Wisconsin might have the top rush defense in the country. And so it's sink or swim with McNamara. And if they're sinking, they're going to make a switch. But it's going to take that. So, mm-hmm. You know, Michigan's going to need to be down by like two touchdowns or like down 10-3 in the fourth quarter, which kind of feels like that might be a thing that happens before they open it up, because, you know, that's just the way the world works, I guess, and when it comes to football. So if we were talking about someone who was not a very old school coach in Jim Harbaugh could see it. But given that he is, I think that's the way it's going to play out. Like if Michigan can't score and they're down, then we're going to look at a switch. And if that's not the case, then we won't.
Seth?
I can't answer psychological questions about quarterbacks. It's just not where, it's not anything that I know about. You know, I can watch the film. I can show you 10 things that Rutgers did because they had no quarterback who can throw. I mean, did Noah Vedral have a single throw in this game that you were like, man, that beat us? Not one.
Devin actually pointed out on a touchdown drive. He's like, hey, man, you got a wide open hitch right here, too.
Yes, you do. So they could, I mean, if they were going into this game and saying, and again, I'm not in there. I don't know the practice. I don't know what's going on with Cade in practice. I don't know if he takes a hit and then all of a sudden turns into a shell of himself. But if you're saying to yourself, I don't trust my passing game, then you need to have answers so that they're not taking away your running game. And you can do that. You can do it horizontally if you can't do it vertically. And I don't know how to coach around, and I'm not paid the big bucks, so I don't know how to coach around the situation they were in, where they went out there, they did throw it for three plays, and they had another three and out. There was a lot before that, and sitting around and letting yourself lose games or get in situations where you can lose games before you fix a problem you know you have seems ridiculous to me. You've got a problem, you've got to address it.
Well, you don't know that J.J. McCarthy is going to be noticeably better, right? Like, he came in and he threw it to A.J. Henning a bunch of times, and a lot of those passes were off. So he still has to prove himself as a better option here. I don't necessarily think that's a slam dunk because he's a talented kid, but he's a true freshman, right? So, you know, everybody wants the backup quarterback, and then sometimes the backup quarterback gets in, and it's like, oops, that's John O'Korn. So...
Yeah, I'm not saying bring in the backup quarterback.
I'm not saying J.J. McCarthy is John O'Korn either.
No. But I hope you're not taking what I'm saying as put in the backup. Right. I'm saying if you are going to go forward with McNamara and that's your guy, then put in an offense that you trust McNamara to run the whole game.
This appears to be it.
Yeah, see, I guess
that offense is split zone and pin and pull, and And while that seemed to work pretty well, it didn't work great for very long, at least this week. And what happens against Wisconsin? Wisconsin is certainly as good a run defense as Michigan is going to play all year. I mean, they gave up 41 points last week and 3 rush yards. So you're not gonna bubble ball them into submission. That's for sure.
So I think, you know, we talked a lot about approach, and as we talked about it heading into the season, I could sense the frustration from my MGO blog brothers about me saying, "Hey man, they're gonna run this rock." I think that was about what they thought they had on the offensive line. I think it was about what they thought they had in the backfield, and I think it's what they thought about where they were at the quarterback position.
Well, that's what Gatta said. Remember, he said, we're going to run it more. And I was saying, no. He meant we're going to run it better. No, they meant they were going to run it more.
Right, but I think within that, there's still a certain level of passing that you have to have. And I think they dialed that into the game. Like, we can do this. We can do that. And I think they go into game. Even in this game, you saw some things in the first half that would make you think, all right, yeah, we can complete this pass. We can complete that pass. And so, I mean, you would have to be, you know, predicting the future to know that, man, he's just not going to be. He's totally out of sorts. You really kind of find that out on the fly, because the first half would make you think that he's going to be able to complete some of these balls.
I agree. So, yeah. You know, what happens this week? I mean, I also agree with you, maybe this was off air, that I don't see Michigan just bubble balling Wisconsin. That ain't happening. They're not scoring any points doing that.
Yeah, so Seth, when you looked at Wisconsin, break them down. And Brian, break down the Wisconsin defense, because they are losing games on defense in Madison.
Yeah, Alex Drain is the one who actually broke down them, because I'm doing the other one there. But he and I were talking about a lot of their offense so far. I haven't talked about their defense. I know what they did last year, which is they are an excellent cover two team. Jim Leonard knows what he's doing. They've got a very good nose tackle. I think that they're a little weak on defensive end, and that's, you know, that's those, we call them tackles, but like, you know, the 3-4 defensive end. And I think that they haven't been tested enough there. I think that Michigan might be able to run some of their run stuff, but they're going to have to do some of the things they were doing in 2018, including the arc read. They're very vulnerable to that play, just the way that Wisconsin brings their linebackers down, the way that they have their outside linebackers are very straightforward runners. So you could probably crack them with that. I think Rutgers offense, ironically, would work a lot better against Wisconsin than I would have guessed it would work against Michigan. I don't think that Michigan's coaches have the creativity or the will to do any of that stuff right now, and I certainly don't think they've coached it. So I just think we're going to curl up and die.
You know, I'm sad to say I'm pretty close of the same opinion. I mean, if Michigan's going to beat Wisconsin, they're going to have to beat it throwing the ball.
Man.
I mean, because they're not going to be able to run the quarterback. You're not going to be able to get the extra player or the extra threat on the field with the quarterback reading. And Wisconsin is just a killer against the run. I mean, Notre Dame couldn't run it against them. Penn State didn't run it against them. We ain't running it against them either, is my opinion.
Badgers live on fear.
I'm sorry, what?
I said the Badgers live on fear, and we're the most afraid offense I've ever seen. Afraid program I've ever seen.
You know, I hate to say it, but we do feel a little timid to me, and so I don't see us doing that. So it means you're going to have to throw the ball and then work the run off the throw. But I don't.
I mean,
I don't know.
The things that I don't think you're going to creativity your way out of this.
No, not creativity. Lighten up. Count this. Walk into Wisconsin saying, you know what? This is a loss on the schedule. Let's just try. Lighten up. Like, relax out there. I don't care if you lose. I don't care if they drop the ball. I don't care if you turf it. Let's just do what gives us a chance. And if we go out there and just, like, if you let Cade fling it around a little bit and his job's not under threat and he can just, like, you know what, dude? Throw it. Put it up to Cornelius Johnson. Their cornerback's not that great. Put it up to Cornelius. Let him do something. Like,
no. I mean, like, this is not a Wisconsin team that is good. Like, you can't just wander in there and be like, I don't care if we win, throw the ball. Like, you're probably going to be forced to do it, but this is going to be a very tight game that Michigan plays close to the vest because it's probably what they should do, because this is a really good defense they're going up against. And then Grant Mertz is probably worse than McNamara so far this year.
Grant Mertz is worse than anybody this year.
Their ground game has gone off a cliff too. So true. Like, you know, this is not a team that Michigan's going to just get walked by. Probably last couple of times that's what's happened against Wisconsin. I don't see that happening here. And then, you know, you're not just going to fling the ball around willy-nilly. It's just going to be one of those slobber knockers that ends like 10 to 13, and that's just the way it's going to be. So, I mean, it's completely unrealistic to be like, yes, let's pretend we're Purdue. Let's put in the backup quarterback to run around some stuff. Like, it's just not going to happen.
I never said backup quarterback.
well, see, but I don't think that we need to be. You talk about being timid. I think that's where you don't be timid. Not that you're pulling your starter, but if you get in this game, because I think, look, they have a really expansive. I mean, they have the bluff stuff still in the fold. Maybe that's something that they will spring a little more of in this game. They seem to feature something different in most games. But my point is, none of that stuff is going to work against this defense if they are committed to stopping the run and you don't make them pay. And so if you can't
100%,
if you cannot challenge them in the passing game, in fact, then Cade might be it. He might do that. He'll have the opportunity to do that. And I'm hoping that he rediscovers it in this game, because it's too small a sample space to say he can't do it. He won the job for a reason. But if you get in this game and it's like Washington and it's like Rutgers, dude, you gotta throw in a little. You got to get the jumper cables out at that point. If it starts to look like that, in my opinion,
I 100% agree with that. I mean, I think they have to come out with a balanced attack, passing the ball, and Brian's right. It's probably going to be the case that Wisconsin's going to have some trouble moving the ball against Michigan too. But if we just go out there the way we have over the course of the year, pretty much, I don't see us scoring enough points to win the game.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we're talking about, like, okay, it's going to happen. Yeah, I know it's going to happen. I know we're going to go out and play a slobber knocker. I don't agree with it. And I'm not at all talking about using the backup quarterback. Not at all. I'm saying you got Cade McNamara. He's your starter. You have a bad series where he goes and throws three passes in the dirt or whatever. Send him back out there again. Cade, I've seen you do that better. But I don't know. Maybe he does do that all the time, and like as soon as he starts throwing like that, he falls apart. I don't know these kinds of things, so I can't like tell them what kind of offense to run. I think that you have certain things that you can do that are easy that Michigan's not doing. If they go up there and they just want to run split zone a gazillion times, Wisconsin's going to destroy you. They are really good at stopping that play.
I think they're going to destroy the run game, period, if they don't have a pass threat, period. I don't care what they do. If they cannot throw the football, they will not run the football, in my opinion.
I'm 100% on that. That's what I think.
So we shall see. Iris, I'm sorry. I missed the whole break. I apologize.
No, Sam, you're good. You have a little few more minutes. You're good.
All right, so rubber meets road, fellas. I think I kind of know where you're going to go with this, but let me let you make the call, starting with you, Brian Cook. I mean, you're right about Graham Mertz. You're right about Wisconsin. This is not a good Wisconsin team. They were telling us before the season that this was going to be an all-time great Wisconsin offense.
Well, I got Michigan 12-10.
That makes me very happy. I've got Wisconsin 15-4.
Now we're all doing it. So, I was going to say that Wisconsin is going to win the game 10-2, but then I realized they are never, ever, ever going to call Wisconsin for a hold, especially in the end zone. So it's 10-0, Wisconsin.
I think that they will, the defense will definitely get the Graham Mertz. I mean, there's nothing to suggest to me that he is going to be able to be the reason they win this game. Now, the question is, which quarterback will play better? I don't think either team will have a super day from his quarterback, but which one makes the fewest mistakes in this game, I think will be the one that wins this game. Is that Cade McNamara? I think there's actually a decent chance, with as bad as Graham Mertz has been there, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, Mertz last week was awful. I mean, Wisconsin was ahead 13-10 in the fourth quarter. And then they give up a touchdown on the kickoff, and then Mertz throws two pick sixes. So, I mean, Wisconsin just, essentially gave away 31 points in the fourth quarter of that game. Plus, he had two more interceptions. I think he had four interceptions. So Mertz has been highly problematic this year. And worse than McNamara, because the worst thing you can do on the field is throw a...
Turn it over. And Cade McNamara has not turned the football over.
He has not done that, and I'm sure that's primary in the coach's thinking. And Mertz has turned it over and turned it over some more.
He's starting to feel a lot of pressure, and that's because I think Tyler Beach, their left tackle, is not the level of quality that Wisconsin has had out there before. He's a fantastic run blocker, and that's why he's out there. But like their passing game has major issues beyond Mertz. I don't like any of their receivers. Chimray DK might actually be pretty decent, but he's still young. The rest of them, I mean, it's the same guys they've had for 20 years. And I what Wisconsin should do is that play that Rutgers did at the very end, where they just take their slot receiver and slam into Hutchinson, because like they were using three guys to stop him. If you just use two, then like you actually might be able to stop him for a minute.
Yeah, I think Aiden was kind of tired by that point.
Oh my god!
Kind of tired by that point.
Oh my god, he was. You could tell he was exhausted. At the last fourth down stop, he just got like taken down by this tight end who's never been on the field, and the tight end was like sitting on top of him and talking into his face. And I'm like, Aiden, like, yeah. First of all, you're number 89 for Rutgers. No one even knows your name, and you're trying to give Aiden the business after he's been out there for like I think 81 plays at this point. So I mean, yeah. Let's talk about Aiden for 1 second. That guy has just been incredible.
We don't have a second though. We don't have a second.
Aiden, you're awesome. That was an awesome game. Thank you. Thank you, my man.
Yeah, we don't have a second. So we will dedicate some time to Aiden next week because I'm promise you he's gonna make a play in this game. He's made a play in every game so far. So we'll spend some time on Aiden next week. Hopefully talking about a Michigan victory. Hopefully talking about a big day or a good day by Cade McNamara. We can keep our fingers crossed.